Welcome to the Discovery Group Leader Training Podcast. This is a training podcast for group leaders, and we're here to empower you to be the most effective leader you can be. Why? Because Jesus gave all of us, as his disciples, the mission to make even more disciples.
That's right.
When we remember his example, we see that he was a group leader himself, and we're trusting that if it worked for Jesus, it'll work for us too. We're your hosts, Ben. Say hi, Ben.
Happy to be here, David.
Ben Markham, David Baltus. We are glad to be back with you in session five. Today, we're going to begin talking about seven challenging group members, but we're only going to cover the first three.
That's right. We felt like this was at least a two-parter. And so for episodes, this is five right now?
Five.
For five and six, we'll be getting into seven challenging group members. And we really could have probably done this for like 12 episodes because there's a lot you can learn about working through with people through some of their difficulties. Because the fact is, the church is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And in small groups, we want to be for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That means some people are going to come to our group who have social skills that are challenging.
Yeah.
You know, or have never developed certain social skills.
Right.
And Jesus loves them, and he wants them to be in community. But there is a way for us, I think, to lead or to shepherd or to guide. They can be loving, that can address, help them to address some of those things. Because for some people, it's just a lack of self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some of you leaders who are new right now and you're freaking out and you're like, are you telling me I have to confront people? No. The fact is most of the scenarios we're going to share are not going to happen to you.
Yeah.
Over the course of your group, you may experience one. Most won't experience three, four, and five of these. It's just not going to happen.
Yes.
But this is us putting some ideas out there to help prepare you for that.
Exactly. And the first one is the person who seems to dominate discussion.
Mm-hmm. This one is close to home because I think I'm very capable of it. I really am. I'm a storyteller.
Yes.
I'll get out with on a double date with my wife and another couple, and I'll find myself telling stories three or four in a row and realizing I'm having a really good time telling stories. Everyone's laughing. But I haven't learned anything about what's going on in my friend's life recently, and I haven't asked them any questions.
Yes.
And so it doesn't always come from a bad place,
no.
the dominant discussion person, but there are people who dominate conversations. Describe what that person can be like.
I think this is the person who is very comfortable sharing, so they're always going to jump in. They're excited to be in a group. They're excited to make a contribution.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always a bad thing. And they just may have a lot to say, and that's good too. They have opinions and thoughts about a variety of topics.
Yes.
And they're open to share them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've probably gotten good feedback about sharing them.
Yeah. Yeah, the dominant person really can just be an enthusiastic conversationalist.
I think so.
I have, however, run into this, and this is probably one of the more common ones I found, is if you do come across somebody that just spends a lot of time alone.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they work from home.
Yeah.
Maybe they live alone. You get that combination of work alone, live alone. When they get around people, it's like a relief to have an adult conversation and to get to talk. Sometimes too, that's the mom who's got two little kids at home, and her only conversation right now is with a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Yes.
And they just want to talk. And so again, a lot of it does come from a good place, but there can be a lack of self-awareness. Where I think it can be really helpful for us, I don't think this one is a terribly hard one to help the person grow in.
No, I don't think so either.
Excuse me, because they don't want to be bad at this. They want to be good at it. And so there's a few things that I'll do. One is I try not to address it too much in the group.
Exactly.
You'll know this person's this way after usually one group. If I need to address it in the group, I'll address it by saying, I love so much what you have to say. I think the whole group really enjoys what you're sharing. This is really great. But I would love to give some others an opportunity to jump in.
Yes.
And the average adult, even teenager, who hears that's going to get that clue, like in that moment, subtly, but I think graciously, that other people need to be listened to.
Yes.
And you can even build off of what that person has said and say, you know what, I really appreciate what you said there. I'd love to hear what some others think of what you just said.
Exactly.
So now you're
tie right into it.
You value them, you value what they've said, but you bring other people into it.
Yes.
And you can continue to do that. If it becomes a common thing, then you do talk to them before or after the group. And it's not a high confrontation thing. It's just to say, hey, my experience tonight in the group, it felt like we weren't getting enough people involved. And I think that's something you could help me with, because what you say means a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned that there may be some who aren't talking because they think you already know all the answers. And so they're just going to let you, they're happy to let you share, but it means they're not growing. Could you help me with that? Some of those dominant conversation people, you could even give them some of the questions to ask.
Yeah.
As long as they didn't ask them and then answer them immediately. But it's about loving them. Now, you had a good idea too about in the first few times you meet, or even sometimes consistently, doing like an order of answering.
Yeah, you could perhaps say, let's go clockwise, let's go counterclockwise.
Yeah.
But have a perceived order so that people know when it's their turn.
And that doesn't have to be for the entire night. A way to slow down the dominant person is to say, for this next question, I'd like to start from my left and ask everyone to answer who feels comfortable. You're allowed to pass. But if you could share something, give us a snapshot, give us a something, you know, you don't always want to say brief or snapshot, but you do want to say, as we go around the group, well, let's make sure everyone has time to share. And I think the person begins to get it. I've rarely seen people leave a group because they didn't get to talk too much, didn't get to talk enough. But it does happen. The dominant talkers are typically, just remember, they're good people that God loves, probably just lacking some self-awareness. And if you can bring it through good questions and affirmation, you'll really help them out. All right, well, we've dominated our whole podcast now on this person. Let's move on and hit these other two.
Here's the next one, the person who doesn't talk. This is the opposite problem.
Exactly. So they want to we want them to contribute.
Exactly.
They don't seem to want to contribute. And there can be a lot of reasons for that, right?
Yeah. I think they may be just waiting for a break in conversation. Some people are hesitant to try to jump right in. Mm-hmm. So they'd like a pause. Mm-hmm. And silence is okay. I wouldn't advise it a lot early. I would want to keep the conversation flowing. But there are personalities that wait for a distinct pause before they're going to venture in, perhaps.
Absolutely. There are some personalities. One that's often called the researcher likes to walk into a room and assess the room thoroughly before they engage. And I've talked to friends I've had that have like that, that were like that. And I'll say, what did you think of tonight? Because you didn't really say anything. And they'll go, that was amazing. And so they can actually be experiencing something really wonderful without talking. So some people don't feel the need to do that to get a lot out of the group. However, we do know that eventually for them to grow,
yes,
contributing on questions, especially related to application, can be meaningful. And we want to inspire them by saying, you know, I think the group would really love to hear what you have to say.
Exactly.
I think affirming when they do talk, affirming then what they've said the next time, like, you know, you've said some really great things in the past. I'd love to hear some more from you.
That's great.
But we also have to remember there are some people who aren't talking because they don't trust you.
Mm.
And they don't trust the group. And
yeah.
So I once had somebody that was a real skeptic attend my group, and she was really unwilling to talk unless it was a prayer request.
Oh.
And the non-talkative people sometimes will jump in on prayer requests because they don't feel like it's answering a question so much. And they can say, well, I can share something along those lines. I do have a need right now.
Yeah.
And you can engage them in further conversation the next week by following up on their prayer request.
Yes.
And then the group gets to know them, and they start to trust that the group actually cares about them. Sometimes a conversation after the group, before the group, during the week can be helpful, an encouraging text just to say, I noticed you haven't said a lot during the group. Is there anything that's making you uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that we can, you know, are you enjoying it? We want you to know, we'd love for you to share more, but we also want to communicate to that person, you can keep coming and not talk, and we're just going to love you.
Sure.
So you're not putting like an ultimatum, making them feel pressure, but you want to make sure you clear any roadblocks for them. All right. So number three, this third person is the very needy person.
Yes. Have you ever experienced this? I have.
Oh, me too.
They always seem to bring the conversation back around to their issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing either, a la your example before. They might be alone. They might not have a big social circle with whom they can share what's going on. But I think this is a good one perhaps to address outside the group in a loving way.
Mm-hmm.
Affirm who they are actually ask questions about what's happening in their life so you know what their situation, their circumstances are.
Yes.
And then I think you might want to find a friend in the group that you could ask to help provide care to them.
Yeah.
Because they obviously need care.
Mm-hmm.
The group is probably not the best place to get it during the discussion.
Yeah.
But as a group leader and another member, you're providing that care. I think that could be super helpful.
So we can really kind of be talking about two categories of people here, and that is the hurting person.
Uh-huh.
Because I've walked with people in my group before who were going through a divorce.
Yes.
Or there had been infidelity. And,
yes.
It seemed like when we come around to them and you could see on the on their face, life was beating them up right now.
Exactly.
Asking them to share one thing from the week,
yes,
and then immediately praying for them,
yeah,
can be something for the group.
That's great.
And then you can wrap that up, if you will. You're showing care and concern. You're praying for them right there, and then you can say, "All right, well, we've got a lot of really great, you know, material to go through tonight. A great topic to discuss. Let's get to our video. Let's get to the sermon we listened to." But that might come up in God sightings at the beginning of the week, or
for
you
sure.
might just want to say, "Hey, we've been praying for you all week. Tell us how this is going with you. Give us an update if you would, and we're going to pray for you right now." And that kind of puts a bow on it. The other person, the needy person, is the lonely person.
Yes.
And I know I addressed that a little bit earlier, but the lonely person is going to struggle more than just the conversational enthusiast. The lonely person is much less aware of what they're doing at the time. So one trick for the person who kind of goes on and on and on and on is if you feel like you've got to get in there into what meaning they're on a runaway sentence that's never ending. It's very effective to actually just say their first name and mm-hmm. continue to say their first name until they stop and say yes or what can I do for you? Because there is something in our brains that when our name is said to us enough, it'll stop our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a rude thing to do. And so I might say to that person, you know, Alice, and instead of trying to jump in and interrupt, I'll just continue to say their name. And at that point, it's, we appreciate so much what you have to say. And if they were sharing a need, pray for the need. If they were sharing a point that was way off or that was just, they were going on too long, thank you so much for what you shared. You could even summarize, what I hear you saying is this.
Yes.
And I would love to hear what other people have to say about that. But we're going to have those needy people that come in, and we're going to get into some more of this next week. We got four more to discuss. One is the non sequitur person, which is one of my favorites, and that's the person who just derails the conversation. But David, why don't you close out this this episode and get us ready for the next?
All right. Well, here's the key takeaway for this week. If we're aware, we're on the lookout for these kind of group members, we can address their issues early and consistently and really help them. We have to do this with great wisdom and care. So come back next week as we tackle another four challenging group members that we sometimes might see in our groups. Remember, the better the leader, the better the group. So go make some disciples.